Welcome back. Thursday with the snow and the rain and the freezing rain. It's looking wintry. Welcome back to our program. Thank you for spending a bit of your day with us. Safe travels wherever you're headed today. We're going to chat a little bit later on this hour with Mike Hamoud with the Atlanta Convenience Stores Association, saying that they did some polling, they did some asking, and apparently Nova Scotians strongly support selling beer and wine in convenience stores. We'll open the door to that conversation. Fergus Dearden is, in many circles, considered to be the Rocky Balboa of entrepreneurs. He was at an event recently in Ottawa. We'll tell you what he was recognized for and why. Also on the broadcast, Jordan Boyd's Celebrity Hockey Challenge is commemorating its fifth anniversary. Number of very well-known Canadian hockey players are going to be in attendance. We'll tell you about that, let you know more about the registration that opened yesterday, I think. But we'll let you know more about that coming up in a few moments. But right here in the broadcast, seeing a number of people, hashtag delete your Facebook, reading from others who said, you know what, there was no real data compromise here, in spite of the delete Facebook hashtag, seeing that Israel, their privacy protection authority is looking into this. Canada's privacy commissioner is looking into it to see if anything has been breached. What about your safety, your security settings, and whether or not you should be worried about this? On the line with us this afternoon, back again to talk about cybersecurity, Peter Morin. Peter, how are you?
I'm fabulous now that I'm inside and not outside.
Yeah, not the greatest weather today. And a bit of a storm brewing around Mark Zuckerberg. In fact, the publicly traded company losing a lot of its value, and a lot of people very critical. Should we be worried, Peter? Or have you deleted your Facebook account?
I haven't. And I guess it all depends on what you're using Facebook for and, what kind of data you're posting up on Facebook. I personally just use it to keep track of, people from high school days and so on and so forth. So I don't really use it as a medium to post anything of any sensitivity.
Well, and I see that too. But what we were told of this controversy, this scandal about this company, Cambridge Analytica, is that it wasn't even really the personal information as much as just the general information, whether you're a male or a female, what it was that you liked, what you shared, those types of things are what they based this whole, campaign, I guess, to try and influence us.
Yeah, that's correct. So the background behind the Cambridge Analytica issue is essentially the use of applications that connect into Facebook's application. So essentially what had happened was an application was developed and the way these applications work is when you're going to use them, they ask you to share your Facebook credentials with them to basically facilitate using those applications. And by doing that, they basically, in a lot of cases, will have access to your data within Facebook. And the application that was used back in 2014, it's not the only one. There are other applications that do this similar type thing. In many cases, you go on a website and they ask you, hey, you know what, do you want to just log in with your Facebook credentials? So that exchange there is what causes the problem.
I have done that, and I've done that probably a couple of times, more than a few times. Should I be worried? Should I go in and should I change? It's the whole ad. It's not as, it's not that I don't have the time to create a user profile and a new one. I already have one on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It was just they made it so easy to do that. Should I go back in now and perhaps reassess?
I think so. I mean, from a security perspective, it's everybody wants to kind of automatically lay blame to Facebook, and in much of a case they have a lot to be blamed for, but security is a personal thing. You have to always be careful about what you're doing, whether it's online or out in public and so on. So in terms of the application usage, I would absolutely suggest that people verify their settings within Facebook. They'll be surprised of the amount of applications that they don't realize have access to their Facebook data that they may have clicked on and not realized that was going on behind the scenes.
There's one conversation about what information, what personal information they're getting. I also have a sense that, just your privacy settings in themselves are perhaps neglected. Many of us don't bother to look. Do I care that people can see my images? Maybe if I sort of clamp down a bit on my privacy settings, I wouldn't get so many spam requests from people who aren't real people. But that said, is it your understanding that Facebook will change the conditions and not necessarily let us know? Will they sometimes change access or perhaps settings without our knowledge?
Well, in fact, this issue that came up with Cambridge Analytica, it actually has been rectified. The issue actually came back in 2014. 2015, Facebook actually put controls in place to avoid this from happening again. So absolutely, they make changes. They also do on a regular basis send you emails or advise you within Facebook itself that they have made changes to their privacy settings. And I think based on their user population, I mean, it's in their best interest, to basically advise users when this is happening.
Got to say that, when I see these sites that go tell you how to go in and check to see what access others in the world have, what other applications have access to your data, it's surprising. I, like yourself, don't necessarily use Facebook for anything more than perhaps, show ideas, story ideas for this talk show, and on occasion posting some content that I'd like people to see. But even that's changed. Facebook is restricting what information, if it seemed to be any kind of a self-promotion, that doesn't seem to make it out there. And they're sending me these requests, hey, if you want people to see it, give us some money. So even at that level, Facebook is they know that we are part of the commodity being traded.
Absolutely. And if you saw Mark Zuckerberg yesterday on CNN, his interview, I mean, he came out in public and said, look, we've breached trust. For an organization that big to come in, basically lay out the facts as they stand and take responsibility is a big deal, especially for somebody like Mark Zuckerberg. So,
Mark Zuckerberg also says, I don't think we've seen a meaningful number of people act on that hashtag of delete Facebook. So I don't think there's any real fear that this thing is going to see a mass exodus at this point. Not everyone's running for the exit.
Well, I don't think everybody realizes that Facebook is not the only social media application that takes advantage of this kind of data. So whether it's Twitter, LinkedIn, or even Instagram, for example, a lot of people don't realize that setting you have, what we call location access, that's a fairly significant setting that people just automatically turn on their phones, which allows these apps to track where you're going and where your location is. So and down to the longitude and latitude in certain cases to be able to track things like, you're from a Twitter perspective, track where you're going based on your phone, providing that information back to Twitter. That's a fairly significant setting that a lot of people, they just automatically turn on their phone and it applies to all their apps automatically. And they don't go and pick and choose which apps they don't want to understand what their location is.
As our guest continues his conversation this afternoon about cybersecurity, Peter Moran is on the line with us. And I was talking, speaking with someone earlier this week, and they said their dad went on a Mark's Work Warehouse site, and they were searching for something specific. Then all of a sudden, ads started showing up in his Facebook. And people kind of get freaked out about that. But that seems to be, that's not so much about mining your data as just tracking where you go with your browser.
Exactly. So that is what a lot of companies were looking for today. Is they're trying to profile as much as they can about you, where you're visiting, how often you go, how long you're on those sites, and then they take that information and they sell it back to basically target those advertisements.
It's again a hashtag that's getting some attention. Delete Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg has apologized. Is he really sorry? He's a very wealthy man. I don't know. Did we see a big enough hit to the company brand for him to actually be sorry about this?
He's offered to speak in front of Congress. I think the fact that he's and whether or not that's under oath or not, I don't know. But the fact that he's gone onto public TV and he's also offered to speak directly to the government. It says a lot. A lot of organizations today refuse to do those things. They don't want to come out. They keep the information very low key. So the fact that he's doing that, I think he understands that. He'll lose a lot of users on his site, and that's what the site is based on.
How long, Peter, have you been on Facebook?
Probably since it's been around. I mean, you know, like I said, I grew up in a different city, so it's easy to keep track of friends from high school and so on.
Yeah.
But I'm not one that posts a lot or anything like that.
I heard Dr. Rob Thacker talking about this, saying, you know, we shouldn't really be surprised if, I don't know if you saw the movie, you know, some of it's facts, some of it's fiction, but the whole, genesis of Facebook, it was a site to rate how attractive people were.
You mean the movie about Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see it. And I do know people that have met him, and from what I gather, a lot of it is very accurate. But again, I think one in that position probably changes quite a bit over the years. So Mark Zuckerberg back then might not be exactly Mark Zuckerberg there is today, right?
Absolutely. Thanks for doing this, Peter. I appreciate it. And I guess I'll have to become your Facebook friend since neither of us are going to delete our accounts.
Absolutely.
All right, sir. I'll look for you on Facebook. Peter Morant is a cybersecurity expert. We're talking about Facebook and the privacy commissioner. Just do a quick Google. There's all kinds of helpful websites to tell you how to make sure your privacy settings are set appropriately to your... It's kind of like investing. What's your level of risk tolerance? I don't really spend a whole lot of money using Facebook, so I don't know how much it's worth for them to mine my data, but... I'm just another wheel in the cog. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're going to speak with Jordan Boyd Celebrity Hockey Challenge Chair Greg Dobson right after this. I was sitting at my desk and I thought it sounded like the snowplow rolling by, but it was thunder. A few people reporting thunder and lightning in this snowfall this afternoon. Maybe you've heard some. Maybe you'd like to let us know about it. You can find us on Facebook that's the Sheldon McLeod Show, and Twitter at the S. McLeod Show. Always available on the phone for sure, too. But let's talk a little bit about what is coming up a little later this summer. We're heading towards the hockey playoffs for sure. But as we look at this coming summer, it's almost time for the Jordan Boyd Celebrity Hockey Challenge, or at least it's time to talk about it. The fifth annual event is happening July 28th in support of the prevention of sudden death from cardiac arrest. And here on the line with us this afternoon to talk a little bit about it is the event organizer, Greg Dobson. Greg, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, Sheldon.
Chair of the event, just to be clear. All right. Again, Jordan Boyd, tell us again a little bit about him.
Yeah. So Jordan was my younger brother. He was, an avid hockey player, very passionate about the sport, trained very hard, played up in Rossay, and was drafted to the Acadie Bathurst Titan back in 2013. And at training camp, he had passed away due to an undiagnosed heart condition called ARVC, which we found out later. So, Jordan was a very active and bright personality, and we're trying to do something to bring some awareness to this cause as well as remember his memory as well.
You guys have raised quite a bit of money over the last number of years.
Yeah, so going into our fifth year here, definitely a big milestone for us. To date, we've raised just over $560,000 for inherited heart disease research in partnership with the QET Foundation, as well as some initiatives that we're doing in terms of AED awareness with the Jordan Boyd Foundation as well.
More than $500,000. That's a staggering number.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about who's coming. Celebration of this milestone, the fifth year anniversary, you say you've got a number of very well-known folks who are going to be making their way to our community, our area, for this event, the Jordan Boyd Celebrity Hockey Challenge. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so, every year we have a big group of local NHL players who, from day one, have, donated their time and talents. A lot of local guys like Brad Marchand, who knew Jordan at a very young age and has been a big supporter, as well as, players like Liam O'Brien and Zach Sill, who all live here locally and have all had time where they trained with Jordan at one point. But we do have some new additions this year, which is exciting as well, which is Olympic silver medalist Jill Saunier, Olympic bronze medalist Ben Scriven, James Neal as well, joining from Las Vegas. So we have quite a lineup of players, of both local players and players who come from across Canada, from different sort of teams and leagues. So we're really excited for this year.
Can't forget former Moosehead and the son of somebody I know, Andrew Bodnarchuk.
Yeah, Andy's been great. He every year that he can make it, he's been, you know, a great person to have on the ice, and fans really love seeing him as well. And we have such a big, you know, gathering of Moosehead fans that show up at the event, and you know, he's fantastic with fans. So we're happy to have him and a number of our local players represented.
With us on the broadcast, Greg Dobson. He's the chair of the Jordan Boyd Celebrity Hockey Challenge. Registration's open. People can sign up today. Who do you hope to see come? Who is this open to?
Well, we're looking to add some teams this year. So, you know, typically we started out with six teams. And, you know, as the tournament grew last year, we added an extra two teams. And typically what we look for is, you know, if people can discuss amongst themselves and find a group of people who are, you know, interested in playing in the event and fundraising for a good cause and want to come out for a great day to contact us. You know, we've grown from eight teams this year to potentially 10 teams in a one-day tournament. So it makes for a really exciting day and for the player experience that we have, both for our pros and for our participants, it's something that we really pride ourselves on. So it's a great day, and, you know, we'd be happy to welcome some new teams to the tournament as well.
Part of this, as you say, is about the Inherited Heart Disease Clinic, and we talk about automated external defibrillators, and the EHS, the Emergency Health Services, is talking about an AED registration program. I suspect this is something that's well, close to your heart.
It certainly is. You know, through the Jordan Boyd Foundation, one of our mandates is to raise awareness for AEDs and the training of those as well. So we've had some great conversations with EHS in terms of the registry, which is a great program that I think once it continues to grow, you know, AEDs are something that are fairly simple to use. The instructions on them are very simple and can often be the difference between a life or death situation. So, you know, pushing, you know, their mandate to have that be a program that's, you know, seeing companies register AEDs across the province to be able to give people life-saving technology and make it more accessible, I think, is a fantastic thing.
Greg, did they use an AED when Jordan fell on the ice?
There was an AED at the rink, but at the time it wasn't used, which was something that we had learned after the fact. And, you know, It's tough to go back and think of what sort of difference that could make. But moving forward, we want to make sure that anyone who goes through a cardiac event similar to Jordan, that there are people, at, you know, able to find an AED easily, but able to make sure that it is up to date, it's registered, you know, batteries are replaced in it, which is something that needs to be done fairly regularly as well. And to make sure that no one has to go through something similar to that.
Well, Greg, again, more than $560,000 raised, and that's ahead of the fifth anniversary event that's coming up this summer. Registration is open now, I suspect. It's the website jbchc.ca that they can go.
Correct.
All right. Thanks for doing this, Greg. All the best, and safe. Be safe if you're traveling today.
Thank you so much, Sheldon.
Take care, Greg. Bye-bye. Greg Dobson, his brother, Jordan Boyd, who died after a cardiac incident back 5 years ago. I think it was around there. But then again, this is all going to happen at the new Dartmouth Four Pad Saturday, July 28th, 2018. We'll take a break. News is headed your way in just a few moments. We'll pick up the conversation on the other side with a man who's described from living on the streets of Halifax to scheduling meetings with some of Canada's top executives. He's considered to be the Rocky Balboa of entrepreneurs. Fergus Dearden after this. As the snow continues to fall, we're into the second hour of the Sheldon McLeod Show. Here it is, the 22nd of March. How you doing? Coming up at 1:45. Mike Hamoud, president of the Atlantic Convenience Stores Association. We've spoken with Mike over the years. In many cases, it's about, well, counterfeit cigarettes or contraband tobacco. Today, this is about the level of support for retailing wine and beer in Nova Scotia's convenience stores. If you've been to New Brunswick, you'll see that they sell some local wines, New Brunswick wines, in their grocery stores. I don't think they sell beer in their grocery stores there or convenience stores, but in Newfoundland they do. And it's in some Nova Scotia communities, you can buy beer, wine, and even spirits at a convenience store. But they're called agency outlets. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up with Mike in just a few moments. 2 to 3 this afternoon, it's John Landry of the Stanfields. Their fifth album, Limbo Land, will be released tomorrow. And John will make his way to the studios and we'll take your calls as well and give you a chance to hear some of what he's been doing these days as he makes his living through art and, makes a lot of people happy while he does that. That's all coming up in just a little bit. But our next guest, as we introduced earlier, from living in the streets of Halifax to scheduling meetings with some of Canada's top executives, he's considered himself to be the Rocky Balboa of entrepreneurs. It says, as a passionate intellectual with a disability, he is never give up, never surrender attitude, enabling him to overcome incredible adversity. On the line with us, we welcome to our program this Halifax story. Recently awarded the most promising young innovator at the Active Citizen Social Enterprise Summit in Parliament Hill, we say good day to Fergus Dearden. Fergus, thank you for doing this. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Sheldon, and thank you for having me on my show. You know, you are the very first interview I've ever had, and I'm very honored for you to have me on your show.
It's a pleasure to get to chat to you about what your story is all about. So, on the streets, tell me, what was life like when this path took you to whatever it was that happened to speaking to me today?
Well, it's kind of a really long story, but I'll try and give it the short version. So, after I graduated university in 2011... I was faced with a difficult decision. I grew up in kind of like a covertly abusive childhood environment, and I had to like do something to change my life. So I had two choices. I could go home and, you know, not have a chance at getting Blueprint started, or I could go to a peer support organization known as Langhouse. So I chose to stay in Halifax and chose the lesser of the two abusive places. So. Mm.
With that in mind, you mentioned this blueprint. Tell me, what's this idea?
So basically, I've developed, it's been a long road. I've developed Blueprint over the past, oh God, it's like 10 years. There's various different pieces to it, but right now we're focusing on poverty, and it's the loyalty program piece, which is what I got recognized for. So how it works is basically a consumer has an app on their phone, and they go to a participating retailer that displays the Blueprint Lives Here branding. So after every fifth purchase, the consumer who scans their app gets a discount at that participating retailer. Now, at the previous four purchases, the retailer pays, let's say, a certain percentage of the transaction into a charitable investment fund. So that's basically like their participation fees. Mm-hmm. So out of that charitable investment fund, what happens is that the profits from that investment fund goes towards people living in poverty that is placed on basically a form of a card or something like that that we're still trying to validate. That can be used anywhere that Blueprint lives. So you can go to, let's say, get a coffee, or you could go get that pair of shoes that you need. As long as Blueprint lives there, you can actually go into the store and shop there if you live in poverty.
Which is, you know, it sounds like it's a complicated, a lot of programming, but we're all, perhaps not all of us, but most of us are kind of plugged into this, you know, showing loyalty cards now if we use our devices to make purchases. It's kind of, that's the environment we're headed into. I can see why this has gotten some attention. Is this ready to launch yet? Are you close to having this actually in the hands of consumers and retailers? Are they buying in yet?
So, Sheldon, here's kind of my barrier that I face. You know, I do live with a disability, and it is a mild mental health condition. I've overcome the majority of it using neuroscience, and I face a lot of barriers, you know, from funding organizations. And this is a big problem for me because, you know, I need access to capital, and we're not at that stage yet because of that. So basically, we're looking into a crowdfunding campaign or the opportunities funds for persons with disabilities. And I just spoke to Andy Fillmore just yesterday, and he's gonna look into that. But really, that's kind of the situation I'm in now is because of, you know, some of the things that I faced in my life. you know, especially with, you know, stigma from funding organizations and my current social situation, that, you know, it's very hard for me to get funding. So that's kind of the barrier that I face right now.
Our guest is on the program this afternoon, Fergus Dearden, and in many ways considered himself to be Rocky Balboa of entrepreneurs. What does that mean?
Well, you know, going into the summit, I kind of figured that I just look back at my life and say, you know what? Look at what I've done. Look at what I've overcome. You know, I've been on the streets. I've been in boardrooms with, you know, some of Canada's top executives and had meetings and conferencing calls with them. And you know what? I look at, you know, you ever see Rocky One?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so the reason why I compare myself to that is, like, Rocky lost his first professional fight. Well, just at the summit, you know, I didn't get the capital that the first prize, but it doesn't mean that the story's over. You know, there's more coming, and I really hope that's going to be the case. And that's kind of why I compare myself to Rocky, you know. Emotionally, I've gone through hell, and I've come out on top, and I really feel I can be that, you know, real inspiration to people that are really struggling right now, and even with mental health conditions. You know, I live with no medication, no nothing. Like, I use neuroplasticity over the past, like 6 to 7 years, and I've literally pretty much beaten a mood disorder without medication. So I just want to be that positive image and that positive role model in the community. And just like Rocky was, you know, people looked up to him as the champ, and I just hope that I can be just like him in that way.
With that in mind, I want to ask about the Active Social Enterprise Summit. There were 15 young Canadians. You were among the group that were there, the second annual Youth Innovation Summit. How did you get there? How did that happen?
So it was actually funny you mentioned that, because I got an email in my inbox while I was in the Common Good Solutions incubator, and I don't know who it was from, but there was this training through the United Nations Association of Canada and the British Council, and it was called the Active Citizens Social Enterprise Training, and it was a weekend. So it was right here in Halifax during November. And I ended up applying, and then I ended up getting accepted. And then at the training, I found out that there's summit in Ottawa to basically present your idea. And I was sitting on Blueprint for a very long time, and so we decided to kind of pitch Blueprint to the people in Ottawa. And I applied, and Common Good Solutions was gracious enough to actually do a video. Thank you, Megan, and also, you know, help me with the flight and things like that. But anyway, I ended up finding out that I was getting accepted. So I ended up going to Ottawa for a couple days and going inside Parliament Hill and presenting in front of, like, parliamentarians and high-profile individuals. So.
And how did that, what was that experience like, given some of the, well, perhaps some of the anxiety?
So actually there's a video of my speech. You can find it on the British Council Facebook page.
Okay.
The last few minutes, I just couldn't, like, I broke down, and there was just some things that just started coming up, and I wanted to make a point, because I held up a pair of shoes that I had that had holes in the left sole, because at that point in my life, like, I couldn't afford to buy another pair. And this brings me back to the point of Blueprint, you know, and how it actually works. You know, you should be able to go out and get the things that you need when you need it. So the past, like, the last few minutes were just kind of incredibly emotional for me. And, you know, it was really nice to have that support and, like, people clapping and cheering me on. So.
Well, I hope this is the start of a long career, a long successful career as an entrepreneur. Obviously, you've gotten the start may have been rough, but this path seems to be a healthy one for you. So, Fergus, congratulations so far.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I know you were nervous about this. Great job.
Yeah. If can I tell people how to get in touch with me?
You can absolutely do that.
Okay, so I just set up a Facebook page. It's at Blueprint Loyalty Program. Or you can contact me on Twitter at Fergus Dearden, and we're kind of looking for people to help me out with raising capital, retailers, if you're interested in hearing more about Blueprint, and possibly a financial institution like a credit union. If you want to hear more about Blueprint, we'd be happy to have those conversations with you.
Well, again, Fergus, very well said, and good luck with that.
Thank you very much, Sheldon.
You take care.
All right,
Fergus Dearden, he's been recognized for some of the work that he's done. He was at this active social enterprise summit recently and had a chance. He didn't win the money. There was a woman from Sydney, Rebecca Dunphy, who was given the Youth Innovator Award, some startup funding for her social enterprise rampage. I don't know a whole lot about that, but good to get some interesting information there this afternoon. All righty. If you're not part of the solution, you know what they say. We're going to take a break coming up in just a few moments. Again, this weather continues to... I was noticing a few people asking what the drive's like on the highways. Haven't heard much about what's happening out towards the airport and the 102. The 103 sounds like it's snow-covered and quite slippery in sections. Obviously, the 101, I don't know how much snow the valley's getting today. And up in northern Nova Scotia, as you head towards Truro, I understand they actually have a snowfall advisory to be wary of. Be prepared, drive according to conditions, all that useful information, you know, don't carry water in a paper bag. We'll take a break. Nova Scotians, apparently, according to what the Atlantic Convenience Stores Association is saying, we support selling beer and wine at convenience stores. We'll learn more about the numbers right after this. And I can see from some of the tweets I'm receiving, the 102 is not in great shape this afternoon. Hashtag mixed metaphors. Just to keep that in mind, if you do have to travel this afternoon, to give yourself a little extra time and just don't tailgate. I hate when you tailgate and it's nice out. Even worse so when it's a day like today. As the weather continues, we'll continue to follow it and we'll talk about it as the all news afternoon rolls along and heads your way. In fact, between 2 and 3 this afternoon, very much looking forward to our conversation with John Landry of the Stanfields and some stories to be told. I noticed he was on Facebook Live recently and he was quite enjoying that experience. So we'll have a chance for you to talk to Mr. Landry coming up. Hey, Alex, shall we do this? Caller 10 and 11 right now. If you want to have two double passes for the Halifax Exhibition Centre's world's largest garage sale, 902-405-6000, or toll-free 1-877-801-8255. Callers number 10 and 11 again. If you want to get these, you got to pick them up, though, by tomorrow. So just keep that in mind. Maybe today's not the greatest travel day, but we'll let Alex go to the phones now and take caller 10 and 11 to win those tickets to see the world's largest yard sale happening at Halifax Exhibition Center this weekend. 600 tables Saturday from 9 to 4. All right. Nova Scotians strongly support selling beer and wine in convenience stores. That's what we're hearing from this latest survey that was done, or commissioned at least, by the Atlantic Convenience Stores Association. To give us a little bit more detail into this issue, we have Mike Hamoud, President, Atlantic Convenience Stores Association, joining us. Mike, how are you, sir? Long time no speak.
Yes, Sheldon. Wonderful. How are you?
Very well. Very well. Why did you decide to take up this issue now and ask Nova Scotians their thoughts?
Well, you know, we live in a world today where consumers expect convenience. And that simple act of being able to drop into your local convenience store for a bottle of wine or a small pack of beer to enjoy with dinner is all about convenience.
And I get that. But, you know, we have NSLCs. They're open a lot, I don't know what time they open in the morning, but they're open most of them till 10 at night. There are some private stores as well. So is this about trying to perhaps make up for some, you know, some challenging retail times for convenience stores?
No, I think it's more about access. It's about creating more convenience for the people of Nova Scotia that want it. And if you look at what's happening today, there are more and more avenues of access that are being opened. So you can get beer and wine at farmers markets. You can go to your local craft brewery now, and at over 60 private agency stores, most of whom which are convenience stores. So why not open it up some more?
Now, I mentioned earlier in the hour that there are some convenience stores that have beer, wine, and hard liquor. They're called agency stores. It's a strange model that the NSLC has in some ways. In order to qualify, you have to be a certain distance from the only monopoly provider of beer, wine, and spirits in the province.
Yeah, and let me be clear. We're not asking for full liquor agency. So, I mean, our ask with this, based on the survey, is most convenience store operators and customers, they just want access to some popular beer and wine listings in convenient sizing. You know, it's a lost opportunity if the product's not available. For example, it's a Sunday afternoon and you want to pick up a bottle of wine for a dinner that you're going to. Or it's a Tuesday night and it's the playoffs and you want to watch a hockey game and you're in the convenience store picking up some lottery tickets, and you want to pick up a couple of cans of beer to watch the hockey game, you're not going to technically make another stop to go do that. So that ends up being a lost sale.
You mentioned there is a chance that, you know, there are people going to the craft breweries. There was a big conversation not long ago about the retail sales markup and products that are sold through NSLC. Maybe there's an opportunity here for local local beer, local craft beer, and local wines and ciders at convenience stores.
Yeah, I mean, we see that as an opportunity as well, too, but we also see it as a bigger picture. I mean, we are in the convenience business, so we have to provide products that people of the province are looking for. And that would include whether it's a Bud Light or whether it's a Coors Light, I mean, or whether it's a Propeller product. So it's about providing convenience. And if you look at the vast majority of beer that's being sold in Newfoundland and Labrador, Quebec, Alberta, those are sold through convenience stores. You look at the 50 United States and you look at European countries, those are all being sold through convenience stores. And the largest class of trade of beer sales in the U.S. at 32% is through this convenience store channel.
Mike,
so it's not a surprise, right?
No,
it's
not
happening
a surprise.
Everywhere else.
And if you do any amount of traveling, we all see that. And, you know, even if you go to Europe, I've used this example. My son, you know, traveled to Germany. You can buy beer or wine in a grocery store at the age of 16 in Germany. Not that we want to, you know, necessarily address or talk about the age of consent for consuming alcohol, but there's a reason that beer and wine sales are allowed in a grocery store or a convenience store environment. We didn't really talk about the numbers. Maybe we should. You don't have to convince me. I think this is a great idea. But when you went out and asked Nova Scotians, what did you hear?
Well, we heard that 68% would be in support of that being sold in convenience stores.
You did get some opposition to it, though.
Well, I mean, you're always going to get opposition, though. And I think we need to be clear here that everybody understands that we're not trying to take business away from the NSLC here. We're looking at complementing their business model. If you look at what's happening with them right now, they've been tasked with the tough deal of selling recreational cannabis right now through 9 stores. So there's a lot going on there, and there's a space issue within those stores to be able to accommodate that. And we see ourselves as being an ally to that. And we're the small format guys, right? I mean, if you look at it, Coke and Pepsi products, you drive to your local convenience store, you're not seeing 24 packs of cans that are, or 24 packs of bottles that are sitting in our stores. We want the singles, 6-pack, maximum would be like a 12-pack. And it would complement what's being sold in the NSLC. They become the destination. They become the experience. They become the wine connoisseurs. They become the beer professionals and all of that. And they do the sampling and the testing and all of that. We want to be the convenience side of that. To the person, as I mentioned earlier, that's driving home on a Tuesday night to watch a playoff game and is already in our store, and they want to pick up a couple of cans and not have to buy a 12-pack or have to drive somewhere else to get it.
On our show this afternoon, we've got Mike Hamoud. He's president of the Atlantic Convenience Stores Association. Mike, and again, I'll ask you, why is this an issue today? Why are you asking, why was this information solicited? Why did you do this survey now?
Because we believe the timing is kind of right now based on what's happening with the recreational cannabis side.
And it's not, well, I mean, we just had a provincial election. We don't have one for another 3 years, perhaps. Did you get any response from government when you brought this to them in the past?
No, we really haven't had any response. We have been in talks with government recently about this, and our hope is to continue those talks and to have open dialogue. And again, I mean, we don't want to be taking jobs away from small communities across this province. That is not our intent. We believe that we can coexist, and we believe that we will complement what is already there.
And what is business like for convenience stores these days?
Business isn't too bad. I mean, it has its ups and downs, and you know, a lot of the factors that are happening within our channel right now with all the blurring and everything that's happening, but overall, I would say that it isn't that bad.
Well, Mike, I wish you luck. And again, this information is now out there and people can check out the survey and offer their support. How can people perhaps make sure elected officials know this is something they'd be cool with?
Yeah, just reach out and talk to your elected officials. And if you're interested in progressing this and moving it forward, have that conversation. And I think it's important that we get the province to start talking about it. As mentioned earlier, this shouldn't come as a surprise or a shock to most people. This is happening just about everywhere else in the world. And I think it's, it would be really good if we could catch up to the 21st century as well, too.
Mike Hammoud, thanks for spending some time with us on the radio. And if you're out, if you're traveling, drive safe. It sounds like it's not great. Looks like it's not great out.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sheldon.
All right, sir.
I really appreciate it.
You take care. Mike Hammoud, President, Atlantic Convenience Stores Association, strongly support, according to the MQO research that was done last summer, the selling of beer and wine in convenience stores. Strongly support, 28%. Support, 18%. Somewhat support, 16%. Strongly opposed, 12%. 10 were in opposition, somewhat in opposition at 9, but the majority saying, yeah, why not? And I don't know, did we see an experiment in real time with the grocery stores? And, you know, there was a time you could walk from one to the other. That's actually changed in some retail locations. So maybe that was an experiment that never really was came to its end, or maybe it has ended. Maybe this is another option we could look at. And as Mike says, well, if you're going to start selling recreational cannabis at the NSLC, maybe this makes sense. Beer and wine, small quantities at convenience stores. We'll take a break. Coming up in just a few. Oh, congratulations, Barry Crotty and Ron Ross, the winners of the double passes to the world's largest garage sale at Exhibition Park. John Landry talking about Limbo Land next on News 95.7.